At 6:15, glad to be with you. In for Tommy Tucker, another day of extreme heat with watches and warnings from the Gulf Coast almost to Canada and from the central U.S. to the East Coast as crazy heat will once again have much of the nation in its grip. And we're seeing many, many people end up in the emergency room with heat-related illnesses. Please take it seriously, folks. Heat-related deaths have been skyrocketing. So I know you hear it over and over again, but so many people say it feels hotter than it's ever felt before. And we were 1 degree away from a record yesterday, and that heat index got up to 115, and that is dangerous. President Trump is on a European trip. Today he'll be dedicating a golf course in his mother's memory in the UK. Yesterday he met with the British Prime Minister. He met with leaders of the European Union. He's been negotiating trade deals with the EU. And I was curious to find out, we've heard so much about how Canadians are not happy with the United States and not happy with President Trump. How do the British feel? How do the Europeans feel about America these days? So Thomas Oatley, he's the chair of international relations at Tulane University, was nice enough to join us. Professor Oatley, thank you for being here on WWL.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
So how does Europe feel about the United States these days, and particularly the British? How are they feeling about America?
I think the best word to characterize the feeling is ambivalent. I think that Europe in general, and the UK in particular, especially post-Brexit, remain very dependent on the US, especially for security, military security in particular. And in this kind of world in which Russia has shown itself willing to use military force on the continent, Europe's need for the American security umbrella is stronger than ever, perhaps, at least stronger than it has been since 1990. And the Trump administration seems reluctant to play America's traditional role, traditional post-war role. And I think that makes Europe very insecure and uncertain about how to manage and deal with Trump.
Did you see any of the interactions between the president and the prime minister or the president and the leader of the EU in their news conferences? There did seem to be a little tension, although everyone was forcing a smile. At least that's the way I perceived it. What did you see?
You know, I think that's right. I think that I did not get a chance to see his meeting with the UK Prime Minister. I did pay quite a bit of attention to the meeting with President of the EU Commission. And my sense there was that the EU in general is very, very much trying to make the best of a bad situation. The trade deal they made is not the trade deal they wished to make, but I think it's their determination that it's the best they could get. Without risking a big trade war with repercussions that for this administration would be difficult to anticipate. And so I think, yeah, there's a lot of tension and uncertainty about Trump as president and what he portends for the future of U.S.-European, U.S.-British relationships.
Yeah, and I really got that same kind of feeling yesterday during the news conference with the British Prime Minister, that it was like everyone was there because they had to be there. You know, you ever go to like some formal function that you don't really want to go to, but you go anyway, so you put on a smile, and everyone can kind of tell that you don't really feel comfortable there. And that's the way I kind of perceived it. But it seems like everyone at least is playing nice and getting along at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that everyone is a bit unhappy to be in this relationship. But this is the relationship that structurally everyone finds themselves within and are unable to easily afford to step out of. And so I do think that trying to make the best of a bad situation is perhaps the best way to characterize the current state of the world. I think that showed up this past weekend, yesterday, and Sunday in particular.
Yeah, and they absolutely need us for not only their military security, but also for their economic security. The U.S., the biggest trade partner. So, yeah, they don't love the deal, but they love the fact that it's not worse, and they see what's happening to other countries who don't play nice with President Trump and what kind of trade deals they end up with or not end up with at all. So, all right, when we come back, I want to ask Professor Oatley about the general relationship between the U.S. and the U.K. You know, I find it very interesting that in other parts of the world, people never forget how much they hate other countries they've been at war with, and some have been at war for literally thousands of years. It wasn't that long ago historically that the U.S. declared its independence from the British. But now it's like, all right, they forgave that and we're best friends again. So we'll talk about that after we check on WWL traffic. We're talking with Tulane Professor Thomas Oatley about the president's current trip to Europe, which he's mixing some personal business with international relations and the business of the United States, and talking about how we get along with Europe these days. I find it fascinating, Professor, that you look back at world history and you see like the Middle East, where countries have hated each other for literally thousands and thousands of years. They may change the name of the countries, borders may shift around, but the people there still vehemently hate each other. China and Vietnam have hated each other going back before the Common Era, before Christ. Greece and Italy, India and Pakistan, these are just hatred that is deep-rooted and taught from one generation to the next, and they never let go of it. America will be 250 years old next year, and the British and the Americans are like best friends now. The Second World War ended, what, just 70-some-odd years ago, and Germany is one of America's top allies. Why is it that America and its enemies quickly get over it and become friends, while that doesn't seem to happen in many other global spots?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, isn't it? And I think the tradition on the U.S. side is long, goes back all the way to the beginning. I think Washington's farewell address, George Washington, that is, as he left the White House, wrote that in our foreign policy, we should have neither permanent friends nor permanent enemies. And I think that is a principle that has shaped our foreign policy ever since. And in the particular case of the British, I think there's a strong cultural affinity. We're both large English-speaking powers. We both have traditions of essentially trying to remake the world in our vision. And to some extent, that makes us adversaries, but also unites us in a common purpose historically. We're also kind of ideologically similar. Both believe strongly in markets and principles of liberal democracy, individualism. And I think at the end of the day, those cultural and ideological commonalities override the day-to-day differences that might occur in any relationship and contribute to creating this very strong bond that has held us together over the past 150 years or so. That would be my take. And I think Germany is a little different because I think there it's more a marriage of convenience, where the recognition of Germany's importance to European security has been a critical factor in the reconstruction of our relationship with them post-World War II.
Yeah, and maybe more interestingly, that these countries don't hate America the way other countries hate those that have defeated them in war or seen similar kind of conflicts. I mean, we essentially, the United States, declared independence from the British and took a very valuable colonial setup away from the United Kingdom. And the Germans, twice, the United States was the key factor in defeating them in war, in world wars. But yet they somehow find a way, maybe out of necessity, because if you're not friends with the largest world power, the economic engine for the globe in America, then your nation suffers. But on many levels, I'm kind of impressed by the fact that both sides have found ways to get along.
Yeah, no, I think that is a very impressive achievement. And from an American perspective, or maybe better, from a European perspective, I think a European and an American hegemony has been more helpful than kind of a traditional imperial model, like the Soviets' approach to Eastern and Central Europe after World War II was very authoritarian and oppressive, whereas the American approach to Europe was much more encouraging of reconstruction and liberty, I guess, for lack of a better word. And so those kinds of policies, I think, have gone a long way to helping rebuild relationships in this post-war era.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and much of Asia could give up the hate the way that the Western world has, and maybe the world would be a far less violent and hate-filled place. Thank you, Professor. I appreciate you joining us here on WWL.
Thank you very much.
And Ian Ozan tells me you're a trivia star, so good to know that. Thank you, Professor. I'm Dave Cohen. Ian Ozan's up next with the news, and then we're talking about what is going on in real estate. More and more home deals are falling apart after both sides seem to agree that they want to sell and or buy a house. We'll find out why coming up.